relevant talk, information, and great music. This is Community Media, KPFT.
Hi, this is Hank Rubicek, producer and lead host to So What's Your Story? And you are listening to KPFT, Houston's community station.
It's really the best representation of community radio. We've had over 500 tellers over the years since 2008, and they've been Houstonians, ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. And we need people to donate, and we really would appreciate it if they give us a call at 713-526-5738, option one. That way you go right to the donation desk rather than bother the programmer, who will lose concentration. Okay. Or as you said, go to kpft.org. And when you do, it would be really so appreciative if you would go and scroll to So What's Your Story as a show that you'd like to kind of see stick around. But we've been around a long time, and we'd like to stay around much longer. Mary, you've been with us a long time, and boy, I'll tell you, it's been a real wonderful, wonderful journey, and I hope we can continue.
It's been a great journey of stories in Storyland, and I have a great set of storytellers for you. I'm going to start with our first one, Greg Odell.
Greg, welcome to the show, and good to see you again. How are you?
Good. It's good to be with you, Mary.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. So to those of our listeners in Storyland, Greg and I were both performers at the Moth Grand Slam on January 25th. So I'll tell you a little bit about Greg. He is a storyteller, a speaker, MC, writer, actor, and radio host who is happiest when he's taking an audience on an unexpected journey, whether that audience is one sleepy child or an entire theater filled with new friends and old friends. Greg's one-man film, Sam Houston and Augustus Allen on WGPA's Time Travel Radio, was funded in part by a grant from the Houston Arts Alliance and can be seen at timetravelradio.org. Greg is currently writing the story of Houston's often forgotten co-founder and first businesswoman, Charlotte Baldwin Allen. And we'll find out a little bit more about that in a minute. But first, I think, Greg, you have a lot to be happy for. Can you tell us that story?
That's true. I do have a lot to be happy for. All right. Well, let me pull it up. You know, one nice thing about being on the radio as opposed to being at the Moth is you don't mind if I look at my notes now and then, which is something we're not allowed to do on the Moth stage. On the Moth stage, it's got to be from memory, which is, you know, a different strengths there. On September 7th of last year, I found myself smack dab in the middle of a situation I'd seen play out thousands of times on television. I'd planned on a routine doctor's appointment at the medical center. Then I'd have a huge and decadent piece of chocolate cake from Houston's famous dessert gallery, because I still follow my mother's strict rule, which dictates after a doctor's visit, you get whatever treat you want on the way home. Clearly, my mother's a very wise woman. Instead, I found myself being wheeled from my doctor's office through the medical center to a waiting cardiology team in the cardiac ICU of Memorial Hermann Hospital and being told I might be having a heart attack. What you hear about that moment was certainly true for me. I didn't think about my possessions or my accomplishments once. I thought about the real blessings in my life, the people, my dog, and especially the kids in my life who range in age from 6 to 29 years old. I thought about how badly I wanted to stay here, to be here, particularly when life throws its inevitable curveballs into their lives. Because every young person deserves to have people in their corner who care about them, particularly when life gets rough, and ideally someone who has some experience with life's curveballs. As the medical team scurried about, my thoughts floated back to a conversation I had with my nieces, Hannah and Morgan, 23 years ago, on a sunny afternoon after we'd exhausted ourselves at the park. As always, we sat on the ground and talked for a while before going home. 4-year-old Morgan said, "Gregor, you know how after we play, we sit and we talk and we talk and we talk? I like that." Oh, I like that too. As I lay on the gurney watching the doctors and nurses do their work with both great focus yet great kindness, I thought that if I was about to check out, that memory with my nieces was a mighty nice one to have had and to be holding on to in that moment. You see, my goal for 29 years has been to help nurture the kids in my life, to be part of the team that carefully guides them into adulthood one step at a time, and to help kids I'll never know through both my professional and volunteer lives. I'm proud to say that I have never raised my voice, cursed at, or bullied a kid, not once. And I realize I have my father to thank for that. My father was a brilliant aerospace engineer who spent his entire career at NASA doing secret things I'd never learn about. And he could be very funny. The kids in my world know the songs my father taught me, like, Mr. Johnny LePeck, how could you be so mean? I told you you'd be sorry for inventing that machine. Now the neighbors' cats and dogs will never more be seen. They've all been ground to sausages in Johnny LePeck's machine. But it wasn't his humor that shaped my commitment to kids. It was his other traits that did that. For example, one day as we drove past an abandoned, partially built strip center a few blocks from our house, when I was around 8, I asked him why the shopping center had never been completed. He was quiet for a few seconds. And then he just exploded. Because some damn kid was asking a lot of stupid questions, and it drove the poor bastard crazy. So he went home and he blew his brains out. Do you want to keep asking stupid questions? I didn't understand mental illness. I just knew that sometimes he was super happy dad, but most of the time he was super angry dad, or even more, super quiet dad. All of his moods were irrational and needed to be navigated with great caution. The funny thing is, I never took it personally. I always knew the problem was him, not me. He's been gone 21 years now, and I understand him better than when he was alive. Much better. My father was not a bad man. He really wasn't. There were parts of him that were genuinely good, but he was a mentally ill man who never got the help he needed. And if the combination of a mentally ill father and a wise and caring mother is what led to my commitment to help kids to have a smoother ride, then it is one of the greatest blessings I could have been given, because I wouldn't trade one of those kids, not for a second, not for $1 million. And trust me, I could definitely use $1 million. And as you can see, I lived through my heart scare on September 7th, and I'm adjusting to my newest label of heart patient, making every day and every visit with friends and family more meaningful than when I began my day on September 7th, back when cell phone notifications and breaking news still seemed of paramount importance to me. So tomorrow, I'm going to celebrate another day of this amazing life by taking some of my favorite kids and talk and talk and talk. Oh, I like that. Thank you.
Wow, Greg, that's really moving. And I know that those kids were there at the Grand Slam to hear you, which was great.
Hannah and Morgan were the two oldest ones. And when they dropped me off, they flew in for it. And when they dropped me off, they said, we don't know what your story is going to be about tonight. I said, that's right, you don't. So they were quite surprised.
That's lovely.
Thank you. Kids are wonderful motivators, and they get you to think about the bigger picture.
Oh, yes. And I'm sorry that your father didn't get the help that he needed. But I'm glad
The lesson to me was your life doesn't just magically work out. You have to work to make it that way, you know? He was someone that didn't have friends and he didn't have happiness or healthy relationships. So it was a lesson to me early on that those are all things you have to work at in your life. They don't just happen.
For sure. Now, I want you to tell us a little bit about how things have gone with your projects. So you already distributed Sam Houston and Augustus Allen.
Yes, that can be found on timetravelradio.org. It's and on YouTube. Still trying to figure out what to do with it. But it was a wonderful project. I like bringing history alive and teaching people the story behind the names we know.
Yes.
For example, most people think that Sam Houston was this great Texas hero. They didn't realize he was despised in Texas and run out of office. And no one but family even showed up at his funeral because, you know, he had the audacity to object to Texas leaving the Union.
Yeah, that was that.
And my next project is about Charlotte Baldwin Allen, as you mentioned. And she's most often described as Houston's first hostess. But that doesn't describe her at all. She was Houston's first businesswoman and a very active part of creating our city. And today she would be known as a co-founder, not a hostess. And I think it's long past time Charlotte's story be told. So I'm raising money to get that done. And I just got a grant from the city of Houston, the Houston Arts Alliance, to do a one-man show. And I'm looking at theaters to do that now.
Oh, and the one-man show will be about?
An evening of storytelling.
All right. Well, that's right up our alley here. That's great. It's great to hear from you. It's great to know you're well and on that storytelling trip. It is a fun trip.
Well, I mean, it's been Dr. Hank and what's your story colleagues that have fostered me along this journey and made this one-man show and everything I've done possible.
And another group would be our donors out there. And we are in pledge month. We're accepting donations to stay on the air, to keep storytelling on the air, to keep people like Greg telling stories on So What's Your Story? So please go to kpft.org, find the button for donate. And as you go through things, assign So What's Your Story as your favorite program that's inspired this donation, and we'll keep bringing great stories to you. Thank you.
And now let me bring on Marie Denise, another one of our guests for tonight. Marie Denise has lived in 3 countries and 8 states working in social services. She has been on the show before to tell us a wonderful story about her first birthday in the United States. Now that she's been here many years, I think she has another story for us. Marie, welcome.
Thank you, Mary.
Are you ready to tell us your story?
Yeah. Some exciting new stuff has happened since the last time we met. I would say, kind of going along with the theme of blessings in disguise, I had quite a surprise from, I would say, the universe. I've traveled all over the United States by myself. I've drove from Michigan to California and back by myself. I've driven from Mississippi, Biloxi, back to Michigan. I've driven everywhere by myself. And so driving alone at night, even back roads, has never been a problem. And until October of 2021, I decided to drive to Southwest Arkansas, or Northwest Arkansas, actually, for one of my brother's wedding. And I was driving from Houston to Arkansas, and it's about 9 hours drive. And so I couldn't get off of work early on this particular Friday. The wedding was on Saturday, so I knew I needed just to get on the road whenever I was able to get off of work. So I got off of work about 3:30, got on the road about 4, and got stuck in Houston traffic for like 2.5 hours trying to get out of the city, as you know. And then by the time I got out of the city, of course, the sun starts to go down. It's about 6 something in the evening by this time. And hadn't eaten all day. So I pulled over into a drive-thru, grabbed something to eat, which all just takes more time. So my goal was to try to be at my family's in Northwest Arkansas, you know, no later than maybe 11, 12 o'clock at night. Well, following the GPS, for some reason, it felt like it took me on these dark roads, off highway, off the beaten path, in the middle of nowhere, and realizing that I wasn't going to make it to my family's at a good time. So I called my missionary family, and I said, hey, you know what? I'm not going to get there in a decent time. Don't wait up for me. Most likely, I'm just going to pull over at the next big city and just get a hotel, sleep for a few hours, and then drive the rest of the way in the morning. And so this was maybe about 9 something at night. And I don't know where I was. I knew I crossed over somewhere into Oklahoma, but where, I don't know. And so here I am driving down the road on this lonely two-lane highway. And the only cars that passed me were two semi-trucks that I had passed maybe about 10, 15 minutes prior to this incident. And I had the music blasting. I'm singing at the top of my lungs out in the middle where there's no homes, no lights, pitch black. And all of a sudden, from the corner of my left eye, which is my driver's side, I see two glowing eyes. And just as I saw these two glowing eyes, I swear this animal ran underneath my car and to try to complete suicide. And it did, because my car ran over it. And all I heard was crunch, 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 crunch of all the bones. And I said, oh my goodness. And of course, you know, my heart is pumping. It's in the middle of nowhere, late at night. And all I knew is my car didn't, you know, jerk and it didn't stop or anything like that. So I said, well, you know, I'm not getting out. I'm just going to keep driving. And so the first thing I noticed was the putrid smell of whatever I hit. It was so nauseating. I had to actually open my windows to try to air out the smell in my car. And then once I rolled up the windows, I kept going. And maybe about 7 miles up the road, all of a sudden I started hearing this knocking. And it was a loud knocking. And I turned down my music and I listened. And I was like, oh my goodness, something is going on in my car. And of course, you just naturally start to decelerate because I took my foot off of the gas. And that's when I realized something was going on with my car. And all the lights inside my car started flashing. And when I tried to accelerate, I couldn't accelerate. My car was just going down, down, down. And so here I am in pitch black. No houses, woods on either side. And all I knew is if my car stopped in the middle of this road, those semis that I have passed back just shortly were probably going to run me over. So I said, okay, you know what? Whatever I got to do, I'm just going to keep driving until I find what I feel is a safe enough place that I can get off of the road completely. So finally, I come onto this wide opening in front of a huge ranch gate. And beyond the gate, maybe what felt like maybe about a quarter of a mile, was this humongous mansion with all the lights on. And I pull in front of their gate. And sure enough, not too long after that, here comes the semi trucks passing by. And so when I pulled in front of this gate, my car died. And Mary, I sat there in this pitch black, not knowing what the world I'm going to do. Trying to size up this gate if I needed to. Could I jump the gate to run to this house if I needed to? And so kind of just sitting there like, okay, don't panic. You know, rule number one, don't panic. So I get out my car And I said, well, let me inspect what might be going on. I opened the hood and just smoke was just going everywhere. And, you know, I don't know but two things about a car, how to turn on the key and how to put gas in it, basically. And so, but I noticed that there was a bunch of liquids just draining out the bottom. So I get on my hands and knees and to put on the flashlight of my phone, and I'm looking under, and sure enough, it looked like what I thought might have been antifreeze just pouring out, and all underneath the car was just tore apart. So whatever I hit was big enough to tear underneath my car. So I get back into my car and I'm sitting there like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And so, but I left the hood on and my doors were still open. So of course my light of my car was on, and I go to get out to go back to the front of my car, to the hood, to kind of inspect one more time, because I decided I was going to have to call my insurance and describe to them what was going on. So as I do this, here comes a guy who pulled over in a white minivan, which all women know, those are scary. And so he gets out and I kind of eye him from the corner of my eye. And he starts to walk towards me with both his hands in the air, real slow. And he says, excuse me, ma'am. My wife and I saw you about 10 minutes ago. And my wife insisted that I come back and see if you need any help. And I look at him like, how did he see me? I don't even remember seeing any other cars pass. And I was like, okay. So he walks closer and I'm sizing him up like, okay, he's trying to attack, where's his weak spot besides his manhood, right?
Yeah.
So he comes over and I explain what happened. And so with his phone flashlight and my phone flashlight, we're looking into my hood. And at the same time as we're discussing what's going on, another car, it's a pickup truck that pulls up. And it's a young male. Both of these are white males. I'm not. I'm black. So I'm in the middle of who knows where. And yes, I do have a true fear of being a black person in the middle of a rinkadink small town because of history. So I'm kind of nervous. And so this young white guy comes out and he walks towards us with a a business card. And he says, ma'am, this is the only tow truck service that's available at this time of night in these here parts. And he hands it to me. And come to find out, I am about 13 miles from Ida Bell, Oklahoma. I ain't never heard of Ida Bell. And so I was like, okay. And so of course, he starts looking, and I'm telling him what's looking. So the three of us are looking in the car. I decide I have no other choice but to call the tow truck. So I get on the phone and I start calling the tow truck and explaining what happened. And he says it's going to take him about an hour and a half to come. So I'm going to be stuck here with these two men for an hour and a half waiting for this tow truck. And get off the phone. And so the three of us are sitting talking. And at some point in time, the gentleman with the wife, I remember him walking away, but I wasn't paying attention to exactly what he was doing. And then he comes back and the young fellow finds out that he is a volunteer firefighter for a town. I think it's called Broken Arrow, which was about 15 miles back from where I had came. And he was saying how in these here parts, there's no mechanics available until Monday. And so I'd probably have to stick around this area until Monday when they could look at my car. And then because my car is a foreign car, that they wouldn't have the parts. And so it would take until probably Wednesday or Thursday for the parts to come. And then by the time they get to fix it, it'd be next Friday. And I'm looking at him like, I can't stay here until next Friday. I got to go back to work. So kind of panicking, like trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do? By this time, it's like 12:30, quarter to one in the morning. Finally, the tow truck comes. And the guy takes a look and I tell him what happens. And he's like, well, I can tow you to Idabel, which is the closest place, 13 miles up the road, but it's going to cost you $150 cash. I don't take anything but cash. I was like, who has $150 cash? I don't carry cash anymore. And so I said, well, I don't have cash. So the gentleman with the wife, he pulls out his wallet and he says, I have $100 in my wallet. The young firefighter, he pulls out his wallet and says, I have about $5. And I think I had like maybe $8 just happened to be in my pocket. And we were like, is this enough? And the tow truck was like, nope, you're going to have to pay the whole thing or I don't tow you. And I was like, well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't have, none of us have this. And he said, well, when we get to Idabel, 13 miles up the road, there is a bank and, you know, you can get it at the ATM. So I'm like, okay. Well, at this time, the first guy with the wife, he turns to me and he says, well, ma'am, my wife and I have decided that we're going to be with you until we know you're safe. So whatever it takes to make sure you're safe, we're going to do that. So if that means we need to drive you to Idabel and help you to get a hotel and make sure you're safe in the hotel, we will do that. And then, and I was like, wow, that's nice. And then he says, or we're coming from Springdale, Arkansas. And I said, wait a minute, Springdale, Arkansas? That's where I was going, Mary. And I said, oh my gosh, you're coming from Springdale. That's where I'm heading. And he said, yeah, you know, we live there, blah, blah, blah. Me and my wife and my two children and the two babies are in his vehicle. And they were on their way to Houston, Texas. And I said, oh my goodness, I'm just coming from Houston 6 hours back. And he said, well, yes. He says, so I'm willing to turn around and we can drive you to Springdale and drop you off at your people's place. Or you can ride with us to Houston and we'll drop you off at your home. And I look at him, I said, wait a minute, you're willing to turn around and drive 3.5 hours back to Springdale where you just came from in the middle of the start of your vacation? And he said, yes, ma'am. So of course, I don't know what to do. I'm 40 some years old. I've never hitchhiked. And I'm just like, well, how about if I call my family members while we're getting my car towed to Idabel? So I hop in the car with him, and sure enough, his wife is in the back seat, and they have two babies. One is like 5 months old, and the other one is almost 3 years old. And so as we're driving to Idabel, I call my family. By this time, it is, I don't know, almost 2 a.m, and my sister-in-law answers, and I say, Becky, don't panic, but I need you to listen. I've been in an accident. My car has stalled. I'm in the middle of nowhere, and I have an opportunity to hitchhike. But I need you to get my brother Ben on the phone so I can decide what to do. So she gets Ben on the phone, wakes him up, and he and I have a quick discussion. And he says, go home. Go home, because even if you come to the wedding, we're still going to have the problem of the logistics of getting you back home, especially if my car is stranded here in Idabel. So I said, okay, I'm going to turn around and go all the way back home with these strangers. So we get to Idabel. The gentleman jumps out and he writes like the note to the car dealership that we're going to leave my car at. And then we get on the road. And get on the road. Now it's like maybe 2:30 by this time. And Mary, I am exhausted. I had been up for work since 7 o'clock that morning. It's 2 a.m. I haven't rested. And all I know is I'm in a perfect stranger's car in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, in the middle of the night. And all I know is I watch too much true crime TV. And I and I don't want to end up being a statistic where they find pizza, you know, parts of my body spread across the highways. And so I am fighting sleep so badly. And at one point in time, at the beginning of our ride, I should say, the gentleman, you know, he kind of introduces the rest of the family. He tells me that they are Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And my first, you know, our first reaction to that is, oh, you're Mormon. Oh, no, 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 no. He wanted to make sure I knew he was not Mormon, that he was Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so come to find out that he worked at a company that I worked for when I lived in Northwest Arkansas many years ago. And I was like, wow. So we have that connection. He and his family just moved to Northwest Arkansas in the same city that my family lives. So I'm like, okay, I feel a little bit better that maybe we could track him down if I was supposed to disappear. And then he said, so he's got the music on and he's got Christmas music on in October. All of it was Christmas music. And I was like, well, okay, this is a little different. His kids are like awake and his little one is like, keep saying, hi, Marie, hi, Marie, hi, Marie. And mom is trying to tell him to go to sleep. It's late, blah, blah, blah. So as time wears on, I'm fighting sleep. And you know how when you're so tired, you don't always know you're even falling asleep until your head nods forward. And so at one point in time, my head is nodding forward and I keep jerking back awake. And finally, at one point in time, when he sees that I'm like trying to stay awake, he picks up the conversation again. And he said, ma'am, I don't know what your financial situation is. He said, but I know that this came as a surprise and something that you hadn't intended. He said, so my wife and I have, wrote you a check to help you financially with this situation. And I said, wrote me a check. I said, what? He said, yes, we want to just make sure that you're going to be okay. It's not much, but I feel that anything can help. And I said, oh no, I'm not going to take a check from you. Matter of fact, I want to help pay for, you know, some of your gas, since I'm riding back with you. And he's like, well, ma'am, the check is already written out, so you're going to have to take it. And he hands me the check. And Mary, I refused to look at it at first because I'm just like, wow, this is crazy. And no, I'm not going to take his money. And so I just hold it in my hand. And I figured at some point in time when everybody was doing whatever, I would just fold it and stick it in their car and just never take it. So we go down the road and I'm back to fighting sleep. And at one point in time, my head falls forward and I jerk back awake. But I didn't move my head. I just opened my eyes and my hand that the check was holding happened to be open and the check was facing forward or face up. So that was the first time I saw the amount of the check. And Mary, guess how much that check was for?
Tell me.
It was for $1,000.
Wow.
I said, whoa, this guy, perfect stranger, great Samaritan, you know, wrote me a check for $1,000. And so, of course, I was like, okay, I just moved to Houston. My move was expensive. It would really help with, you know, this expense of this car. And so I said, well, you know, who am I to deny their blessing? Because sometimes, you know, paying forward helps. And so, so end up getting home at like 7 something in the morning. They drive up directly to my place. He helped me get my bag out of his vehicle. And, you know, his wife gets out. She gives me a hug and she says, I hope everything is going to be okay. And they leave. And of course, I don't hear from them again. And so I'm looking at the check and I see his first and last name and an old address from Florida, remembering that they had only just moved to Northwest Arkansas. So I was like, bummer, I don't know his address and I'm not sure how I can look him up. So I decide, well, let me do some investigation to see if through the company that he works for, because remember, I used to work for that company many years ago. So I look up the directory and sure enough, I find him on LinkedIn. And so I ended up sending a card and a gift card saying thank you to his job. And yeah, so that was quite the blessing in disguise.
Oh my gosh, that's an amazing story. And you know, I'm a white woman, but I would be terrified at having to end up in a car with someone And mm-hmm. Oklahoma's got a lot of stories of not good happening. Wonderful that this happened. And just a wonderful reaffirmation of the fact that really human beings can be wonderful.
Yes, I will definitely say that this family quite honestly restored a little bit more faith.
You're tuned to 90.1 KPFT FM, FM HD1. And so what's your story running in this spot? Because it was preempted last night by Execution Watch, trying to make room for everyone here and giving you access to an award-winning program in the middle of the day. Please support KPFT by calling 713-526-5738, push option 1, or go to kpft.org on your mobile device or desktop and hit the donate button. We are in Fund Drive in February. This is a serious matter. If you enjoy this program and other great programming on KPFT, 713-526-5738, option 1. If you don't enjoy it, 713-526-5738, option 1. Good or bad, up or down, this is community radio for Houston, Texas. There's only one of these, and we walk the line. We rely on your support. And thank you for everybody that stepped up today and during this drive and in the past that have made donations. Back to So What's Your Story?
That reignite your faith in human beings? Well, reignite that faith by donating to kpft.org. And you go to the website, kpft.org, and find the donate button and find So What's Your Story, because our stories are inspiring. And Marie, this is a very inspiring story. You are an inspiring. I love that story.
Thank you, Mary. Well, thank you for having me back again. I just love sharing it with you all and just how wonderful it is that you support, you know, just us common folks out here living our lives, but being able to share a piece of it with everyone. That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you.
That's the thing. And that's what storytelling is sharing. Mm-hmm. Is sharing our lives and our experiences in a really profound way.
Absolutely.
I love your story. I'm gonna keep remembering it even after it airs, because it's a beautiful story. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. I just love listening to Marie Denise tell a story. She makes it so much fun with her wonderful laughter. But now it's time for station identification, so we're going to pause from storytelling for a moment. We are a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston Community Radio, also broadcast at 91.9 in Huntsville, 89.5 in Galveston, and anywhere on the internet as kpft.org on HD1. Our show, So What's Your Story?, is broadcast every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central Time. But as you will hear, you can listen to the show after it has been aired. Oh, yes, just visit our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at www.houstonstorytellers.org, and that's just one word, Houston Storytellers, plural, where you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. Want to become a storyteller? Join the Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab and grab the Zoom information for the next virtual swap. Houston Storytellers Guild also posts other exciting events on the calendar, including other storytelling associations around the state's events. Another way to get into storytelling is by joining the Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. You can find them at https://texasstorytelling.com. And I'm going to spell that one out. TEJASSTORY, and then it's just telling.com. All righty. Our friends at the Moth are back at Warehouse Live in person and back on schedule for the second Tuesday of the month. Check out their website, themoth.org. And yes, that's one word, the Moth.
and search on live events in Houston. You can also check out their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, for updates on their next storytelling slam. Speaking of Facebook, you can find us at So What's Your Story on Facebook. Please visit us. Oh, yes. And please like us. You know, just like anybody, we just love being liked. You can suggest storytellers or themes on Facebook or by emailing us at swys@kpft.org. Now, before we all curl up again and get comfortable so that we can celebrate those blessings in disguise, why don't you celebrate KPFT as your own Houston blessing in disguise?
Big shout out to Catherine for that online donation. Please do the same. 713-526-5738. Each program has a goal. If you really love what you're hearing and So What's Your Story, then make that donation. 713-526-5738, option one, or kpft.org.
I can do this. kpft.org and click on the donate button. And did I tell you that we would love it if you choose our show, So What's Your Story, to credit with inspiring you to donate? Well, yes, of course we would. You do have to scroll down to the S level of the alphabet. Well, now let's curl up again and hear Darcy Bryan Wilson describe her blessing in disguise. My next guest is Darcy Bryan Wilson. She lives in Brookside Village, a small town south of Houston that nobody has heard of. Darcy has two daughters and lives in an old farmhouse. She is a video production manager in the daytime and an active storyteller by night. Darcy was another participant in the recent Moth Grand Slam along with Greg Odell and myself, which means she's a Story Slam winner. She is very involved in the community and is going to tell us how she was inspired to become that person. Darcy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mary. Thanks. Nice to see you.
So you had a great story for Blessings in Disguise, and I wonder if you could share that with us.
Do you just want me to dive into the story?
Yes, please.
Great. It was right before Thanksgiving in the late 80s. My mother was driving me to school, and we were listening to an NPR story about how some local organizations and churches who served people meals for Thanksgiving were refusing to serve anyone with HIV or AIDS. At the time, our country was in the grip of hysteria surrounding HIV, even though it had been established by then that you couldn't get it from a handshake. Looking back, I think the fear likely came as much from HIV as from the community it was devastating, which at the time was primarily gay men. There were so many stories of dying men who were being abandoned by their families and ostracized by their communities. I turned to my mother, who at the time was the pastor of our little Presbyterian church on the south side of town. I said, "Do you think the church could fill that void?" She said it was likely too late for Thanksgiving, but maybe for Christmas. The congregation agreed. So we formed a Christmas food basket committee, because committees are what Presbyterians do best. We worked with AIDS Foundation Houston, who had an apartment complex for about 20 men who had had AIDS and would otherwise be homeless. We put together a shopping list, and then we had to adjust it. Of course, we thought everyone should get a turkey. It was pointed out to us that an entire turkey was likely too much for the residents, who were single gay men with no families. Most would be enjoying their Christmas dinner alone. So we purchased Christmas chickens to go along with all the trimmings, stuffing and cranberry sauce, green beans, and some shelf-stable items to last into a few weeks, things like peanut butter and spaghetti. The children insisted we add a few special Christmas treat items, things like hot cocoa mix, marshmallows, and candy canes. By the time it was all put together, it wasn't so much a food basket as a series of very heavy boxes. We were ready to deliver the Saturday before Christmas. Our delivery team was small. It was my mom, my stepdad, and my three younger sisters. Now, y'all are from here, so you know that the Saturdays before Christmas, some years it's 80 degrees and sometimes it's 30 degrees. That Saturday, it was 28 degrees, and there was a thin sheet of ice covering everything. It took two of us just to carry one box, and we were slipping and sliding all over the place, and it was so windy and bitterly cold. At the first apartment, we were greeted by a painfully thin, shy man dressed in a robe and slippers. We carried in his boxes, and he had tears in his eyes as he thanked us, and he held his hand out for a handshake. I'm ashamed to say that I hesitated. It was a rational fear. My 12-year-old sister did not. She removed her glove and took his hand. It was a gesture that brought me back to myself, and I did the same. We continued our deliveries, some up icy stairs. We grabbed brief seconds of warmth in the van between deliveries. At one point, my stepdad slipped and fell hard on the frozen concrete. I began to wonder, was this all even worth it? About the fifth apartment, there was a very smartly dressed, very handsome man. And as we brought his boxes inside, we stopped and stared. Inside his apartment, he had a gorgeous decorated tree suspended upside down from the ceiling. It was amazing. It took us over an hour to deliver all of the boxes to each apartment, and we were freezing and exhausted, but we did it. And as we were leaving, we were stopped by the very first man we had visited. He was still in his robe and slippers, but he was carrying a tray of mismatched coffee mugs filled with piping hot cocoa, topped with marshmallows, and each one decorated with a candy cane to stir. We sipped our cocoa and finally felt warm as much by his kindness as by the cocoa itself. In the van on the way home, I sobbed because I knew those elegant, kind, and creative individuals would not be there when we returned the following year. And they weren't. And we did go back. This Christmas, we delivered 100 food baskets to people in need all over Houston, including an apartment complex for families living with HIV. It is thankfully no longer the death sentence it once was. We see the same families year after year, and we get to watch the kids grow up. You may be familiar with a Mr. Rogers quote. By the way, Mr. Rogers was a Presbyterian minister. He said that as a child, when tragedy struck, his mother encouraged him to look for the helpers. What I decided while sitting in that van 30-something years ago was that whenever possible, in whatever tiny way I can, I want to be the helper, even if it's hard, cold, or heavy, and even if I'm scared, because it is worth it. Thank you.
Darcy, that's a beautiful story, and I had to share with you that my favorite cousin was gay and living in Houston in the 70s, 80s, and died in the 1980s of AIDS, and I have never forgotten it. I used to dream about it.
I just hate to think of what we've lost as a country, as a society. We have lost so much.
He was an absolutely wonderful person, and I would dream that I ran into him and he was well. I was just wanting that. Mm-hmm. And to add to that, I was living in Manhattan at the time, and I had a favorite little restaurant downstairs. I actually lived in an apartment above the Health and Racket Club that you see in Seinfeld. And I had a favorite little restaurant, and late at night, before I went to bed, I would go down for my nightcap. And, you know, the dining service would be over. And I knew all those waiters, and I loved them all. One of them I had a real crush on. And it happened to be his boyfriend I was confessing the crush to one time. I didn't know who he was. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I love Bill. He's so beautiful. He's so wonderful. And they all died of AIDS. And I just feel like a whole chapter of my life was taken out. So that was a wonderful gesture. I'm going to love Presbyterians from now on.
Well, you should.
Yes. And I love it that your mother was the pastor. Mm-hmm. That was a very modern thinking religion. I also need to add for everybody out there, did you enjoy this story? Well, if you did, you need to donate to KPFT and indicate that So What's Your Story is your favorite program. It's really easy. Go to the web, go to kpft.org, hit that donate button. And as you scroll down, at one point, it'll say, which is the show you want to feature here? And just, you'll have to keep scrolling because it's alphabetically listed. And S is way low in the alphabet, but we're there. So please donate and remember the kindness and the blessings that you hear from on this radio. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg Odell, Marie Denise, Darcy Brian Wilson, for your wonderful stories. They remind us that there is always a silver lining in every cloud. I'm going to bring on Hank Rubicek one more time just to tell you exactly why donating to KPFT.org keeps a silver lining there for all of us. Hank.
Thank you, Mary. I appreciate it. I know that we're running a little late, but I wanted our listeners to know that all of these stories that they've heard all of these years, because we have a good following, and I'm so proud of that. I want people to remember that KPFT and this show has done some pretty remarkable things. For example, many Houstonians will remember Anthony Graves, who is the 138th exonerated death row inmate in America. He was 26 years old when he was arrested in 1992 for murdering a family of six in Somerville, Texas. He was wrongfully convicted. He was exonerated and released. Now, the prosecutor was ultimately disbarred for withholding evidence. The conviction was based on the false testimony of Robert Carter, who later admitted that he committed the crime alone, and he was executed on May 31st, 2000. Now, Graves was released from prison on October 27th, 2010. But here's the thing. It was his attorney, Nikki Cazares, who along with her undergraduate class in investigative journalism at the University of St. Thomas, who collectively uncovered the evidence that allowed the court to see that Graves was innocent. But, you know, October 27th was on a Monday, and they were not going to disclose his exoneration until that day. And Nikki said, there's no way. That's ridiculous to put him through all this anxiety after 10 years of pain. So she worked with KPFT to bring him the news on the air, make it a broadcast on the air, that he would be released on Monday morning. Now, the reason why that worked is because prisoners were allowed to listen to the radio. He was a KPFT fan. He heard that, and he was ecstatic, and he hasn't stopped thanking us since. It may not sound like a big deal, but, you know, she worked with KPFT to bring the news on the air that Friday so Graves would learn of his release before the weekend to overcome any kind of anxiety. It's important to know that, you know, KPFT's mission of fairness and a balance of human life that fuels what we do is exactly what makes 90.1 Pacifica Radio. It's more than just community radio. This is the kind of stuff that we pay for, the kind of programming fueled by the power of peace. That's what Pacifica is. It may sound hokey and maybe even corny, but it's very real. It's not a Republican or Democrat thing. It's about the right thing. One other real quick synthesis, or real synopsis, if I could, Mary, years ago. And by the way, I wanted everybody to know that story about Nikki Cazares and the story that she told on the air was aired on June 30th, 2016. So if people go to the Houston Storytellers site and they go to radio program, they'll be able to listen to it themselves. I encourage them to do so. But Mary, there was a story years ago, I want to say maybe 29 or 10, and there was a woman who came on the air and said, I want to disclose something for the first time. Can I do that? Because I know you like knowing what the stories are about. And I said, no, that's great. That's great. You got about 8 minutes, you know, tell whatever you want. And she gets on the air. And I see that she's having a hard time saying something. And I tell her that it's okay, take your time. She says, my daughter was murdered in Detroit. And you could hear silence in the air, even though you even couldn't hear anybody. You knew that everyone was just dropping their jaws. It was the first time that she revealed this. She was in an organization, a crime-stopping organization for women. Her daughter was sexually assaulted and murdered. And it was, I didn't even know what to say. And that's rare, as you know. I didn't have a follow-up question. I didn't have a comment. I just looked at her and I said, that has got to be the most difficult thing anybody could ever say. Why did you share it with us? And she said, because I think that your audience might be the kind of people who would understand the pain that I'm going through. I haven't been able to find them yet. And this is the kind of thing that we put on the air. We have fairy tales, we have folk tales. We obviously have great stories like the ones we've heard today. And I think you put them very well, Mary. You know, it's got a silver lining. That's what stories show us. But sometimes we listen to these stories that are so incredibly poignant and so real and so raw that we just can't believe the power of story. 713-526-5738 is a number that may be embedded in all of our minds because we hear it all the time, but it's something that we have to do. Keep shows like this alive, please. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Hank. And thank you for those wonderful stories about how important KPFD.org is and how important So What's Your Story is. So we will be back next week with more tellers and new journeys. Don't leave. Just stay tuned into KPFT because we can always make your commute home an easy one for you. Make Houston's community station KPFT 90.1 a part of every day. And like I say, while you're driving home or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It'll just keep you moving along. Keep loving those great stories. Keep donating. And we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to never forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you want, there's a blessing in it, there's a silver lining, and it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.